would be 4.2% or 0.4 percentage points below its forecast. Yet the new variant has already made its impact and is expected to influence consumer and corporate confidence ahead of the holiday season. That won't be a good sign for what we can expect in the months to come.
Economic Cooperation Organization, or ECO, is an intergovernmental organization that seeks sustainable economic development of its member states and the region as a whole. Currently, 10 countries, including Iran, Azerbaijan, Afghanistan, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Pakistan, Turkey, Tajikistan, Turkmenistan, and Uzbekistan, are members of the organization. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi attended the 15th summit of the Economic Cooperation Organization in Turkmenistan. Addressing the one-day summit on Sunday, he assured Iran's neighbors that U.S. sanctions will not hamper regional cooperation and interaction.
The United States' cruel sanctions against Iran will not have the slightest impact on the Islamic Republic of Iran's policy of maximum interaction with neighboring and regional countries.
Raisi called on member states to collaborate in a range of fields, from the creation of a regional electricity market to water transfer projects as well as energy ventures. He also proposed creating an internal financial mechanism by the Economic Cooperation Organization to boost its efficacy. On the sidelines of the summit, Raisi held a string of high-level bilateral meetings to discuss ways to develop relations. The Iranian president has time and again stated that boosting cooperation with neighboring countries is one of the main goals of his administration that will help improve the economy as well as peace and stability in the region. Iran took a big step in this regard in September, when it formally became a full member of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, a Eurasian political, economic, and security alliance accounting for about one-third of the world's land and exporting trillions of dollars in goods annually. Recently, Iran's Deputy Foreign Minister, Ali Bagherikani, traveled to several regional countries, including Qatar, the United Arab Emirates, and Oman, for talks on expanding bilateral cooperation. This month, he also went to four European countries, namely France, Germany, Britain, and Spain, where similar talks took place. Bagherikani's European tours came ahead of a new round of talks between Iran and the remaining signatories to the 2015 nuclear deal in Vienna. The core issue for Tehran is the removal of the sanctions. Those sanctions took effect after the U.S. left the nuclear deal unilaterally in 2018 as part of its so-called maximum pressure campaign, seen as an attempt to isolate Iran in the international arena.
The Americans intend to make Iranians suffer as much as possible so that they can get extra concessions from Iran. But Iran has been able to make progress in many areas despite the U.S. sanctions, and the economy is adjusting despite the hardship.
More than 3 years after its implementation, it seems that Washington's maximum pressure campaign has failed, with Iran expanding ties with countries in the region and beyond. Economic sanctions have been Washington's foreign policy tool of choice for years. The U.S. usually uses crippling economic sanctions to pressure other nations into succumbing to its demands. The U.S. maximum pressure campaign sought to squeeze the Iranian economy on the theory that crippling sanctions will force Tehran to choose between its own economic viability and its nuclear activities. However, despite the economic pain from sanctions, Tehran didn't concede. Speaking on a television show in July, U.S. Special Envoy to Iran, Robert Malley, admitted that the maximum pressure campaign against Tehran has failed miserably and hurt U.S. interests. Malley also acknowledged that Tehran's nuclear program accelerated only after the former U.S. President Donald Trump launched the maximum pressure campaign.
The economy is adjusting, and Iran is expanding relations. It's expanding its exports. it's producing more inside the country. And the policy of this government is to create a stronger bond between Iran and neighboring countries. And neighboring countries in particular are important for Iran with regards to trade.
Addressing the 15th summit of the Economic Cooperation Organization, Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi assured that Washington's sanctions will have no bearing on regional cooperation and interaction. In fact, the ECO bloc, along with the ESCO and other organizations like BRICS, show that if countries collaborate, world trade can occur without the presence of the U.S.
In the limelight.
After the U.S. government announced that it has reached an agreement with Mexico to restart the Trump-era Remain in Mexico program, immigrant rights advocates criticized the Biden administration for hiding behind the flawed court order to justify reviving a policy that forces asylum seekers to wait in makeshift camps along the southern border pending legal review of their cases. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Kenny Stencil, journalist. This article is published under the heading Biden Rebuked for Plan to Implement Even Worse Version of Trump's Remain in Mexico Policy. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. After the U.S. government announced recently that it has reached an agreement with Mexico to restart the Trump-era Remain in Mexico program, immigrant rights advocates criticized the Biden administration for hiding behind a flawed court order to justify reviving a policy that forces asylum seekers to wait in makeshift camps along the southern border pending legal review of their cases. Re-implementation of the so-called Migrant Protection Protocols MPP program will begin soon, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, DHS, said in a statement, adding that once fully operational, MPP enrollments will take place across the southwest border and returns to Mexico will take place at 7 ports of entry in San Diego, Calexico, Nogales, El Paso, Eagles Pass, Laredo, and Brownsville. Mexico's decision to accept the return of individuals enrolled in the program is subject to certain humanitarian improvements, DHS noted, according to the agency, which worked with the U.S. Departments of State and Justice. Key changes to MPP include a commitment that proceedings will generally be concluded within 6 months of an individual's initial return to Mexico, opportunities for enrollees to secure access to and communicate with counsel before and during non-refoulement interviews and immigration court hearings, improved non-refoulement procedures, and an increase in the amount and quality of information enrolled individuals receive about MPP. DHS will exclude particularly vulnerable individuals from being enrolled in MPP. In addition, DHS will provide COVID-19 vaccinations for all persons enrolled in MPP. Immigrant rights advocates, however, stress that MPP is an irredeemable violation of human rights, regardless of the minor revisions proposed by the U.S. and Mexican governments. The Biden administration's shameful regression in restarting this unlawful Trump policy flies in the face of its own determination that no number of changes could render this deadly policy more humane or provide the cases to the asylum system that the law requires. Mariella Hincapie, executive director of the National Immigration Law Center, said in a statement recently. Aaron Rachlin Melnick, a former immigration attorney who is now policy counsel at the American Immigration Council, concurred. In a detailed Twitter thread, he said that allowing the tiny handful of people who managed to get lawyers, 5-7% compared to 60% inside the U.S., to have more meeting opportunities before hearings is not much of a help. In her statement, Hincapie said that since its creation, the Remain in Mexico policy has subjected tens of thousands of people to grave danger and violated their fundamental right to asylum in the United States. The Washington Post reported that officials in the U.S. are planning to initially use the MPP program primarily for single adult asylum seekers, who account for the majority of unauthorized border crossings, according to an unnamed Biden administration official. Mexico is willing to accept asylum seekers from Spanish-speaking countries, as with the previous version of the program, but migrants from all Western Hemisphere nations will be eligible for return, the newspaper reported, citing an administration official. In response, Rachlin Melnick argued that the Biden administration's choice to expand Remain in Mexico to everyone from the Western Hemisphere, including Haitians, makes the program even broader than it was ever under the Trump administration. President Joe Biden didn't just bring back Remain in Mexico, he is made it worse. Legal experts, however, argue that the Biden administration has far more leeway than it claims and is certainly not required to expand the program. In response to a lawsuit filed by Republican officials in Texas and Missouri, a federal judge in August ordered the Biden administration to reinstate Remain in Mexico. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit, which former President Donald Trump pushed in an even more conservative direction by appointing numerous far-right judges, refused the administration's request to put the ruling on hold and ordered expedited consideration of the administration's appeal, the Associated Press reported. On August 24th, AP noted, the U.S. Supreme Court's six right-wing justices argued that the Biden administration likely violated federal law in trying to end Remain in Mexico and refused to block the lower court's ruling. Nevertheless, as Rachlin Melnick pointed out, the lower court said Biden doesn't need to do the exact same implementation as Trump. Moreover, said No More Deaths, an organization that provides humanitarian aid to migrants in Sonora and borderlands, officials in the Biden administration were considering reinstating MPP well before the court gave them a convenient excuse to do so. Their hands aren't tied. This is a choice. No More Deaths cited reporting by Vice, published almost a week before the Supreme Court handed down its decision, which said senior U.S. officials have privately discussed reviving the Trump-era policy Migrant Protection Protocols, MPP, colloquially known as Remain in Mexico, in order to manage the number of migrants arriving at the border, according to three sources with knowledge of the discussions. Under the policy, the U.S. sent more than 70,000 asylum seekers from 2019 to 2021 to some of Mexico's most dangerous border cities to wait while their immigration cases were decided. Biden heavily criticized the policy as a candidate and suspended it on his first day in office. But as border apprehensions jumped, high-ranking officials in the White House floated the idea of bringing the program back, and it's been bandied about 4 weeks. Among a small circle of government officials, discussions have centered around whether there could be a gentler version of the policy, a notion immigration advocates decry as ludicrous. The NILC's Hanikpe recently stressed that the Biden administration must stop hiding behind a flawed court order to justify restarting Remain in Mexico.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the pit.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم سلام عليكم dear listeners. Youth Station is on track.
It's the Youth Station for
right,
you.
That has to
we're not.
You,
we can't move away. You can't change the slogan of the show.
Well, you have
the catchphrase
yeah,
of the slogan.
So I'm Mehdi. Yeah. This is Muzaffar Haider Abbas.
Yeah, this is me.
Muzaffar Abbas Haider.
Yeah, that's right.
You almost forgot that. I mispronounced your name.
Muzaffar is fine.
Muzaffar, yeah.
Nobody cares about my surname.
No one does. Okay. Yeah, so welcome to the show, guys. I was.
Oh, yeah, welcome, everybody, yeah. Welcome. So Mehdi and Muzaffar show. Boom, 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 boom,
inconsiderate.
Boom, 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 boom.
Yeah. Right. There's a hadith.
Yeah.
That you are going to be sifted and then sifted.
Whew. Allahu Akbar. Yeah, that's...
Yeah.
It's towards the end of times,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, go on. What does it say?
So towards the end of times, people will be sifted, and they'll be sifted again, and they'll be sifted again, until only the best of the best of the best remain. I don't know about you, I feel myself failing, you know? I'm falling through the sift. Yay, it's happening again. I'm going to the bottom of the food chain.
Over and over. No, yeah. So,
Allah protect us, honestly. The fitna of Akhir al-Zaman is one of those things that we often ask Allah to protect us from. Min fitnat al-Zaman. And fitna is like
test.
Corruption. It's, yeah, it's sometimes translated as test, but it's when we use it, we're using it in the context of it being a corruption or confusion, right? Test as well. I mean, I guess these confusions are tests. Why
you're
testing
right.
you, right? It's not tribulation. Tribulation...
Easy, bro. You know, it depends where it's used. Fitna, if it's about the people, it's what you said.
Yeah.
If it's like fatannahu, like Allah says, I did that, it's like I tested them. So it depends on
But fitna tannas, it's the confusion that they create, right?
Right, yeah. Where
let's go with test, because confusions are...
Tests,
confusing. They're supposed to be confusing. But anyway, the point is that fitna, whatever that fitna is, of the Akhir al-Zaman, of the final age, is so confusing and so compelling and so difficult that it has the capacity to filter out most of humanity. and only very, very few people will rise to the top. But sorry, I completely cut you off. I wanted to hear what you had to say.
Well, that's pretty much the discussion that I wanted to have. Mm. There are two societies, two environments that we have. We've got an Islamic environment. Alhamdulillah that we are in an Islamic environment over here. Right? Living here for a long time, we might not realize the things that we have around us that are Islamic, right? Yeah. And because the little things that we see not being practiced, we're going to get irritated. But in a general aspect, we do forget the immense aura of Islamic society around us,
so
right?
True. You hear the adhan at least?
At the very least, yeah. Ask those who are not here. Ask those who do not get these things, right? And who are dying to live in this situation.
Man, back
like
in
this.
The UK, the Muslims are afraid, even in their little communities, to do the adhan out loud because, you know, people might complain about noise pollution and then, you know, Islamophobia and attacks against Muslims and then the whole fitna that it will actually create.
And yeah, but that's just the surface.
Yeah.
That's just the tip of the iceberg.
And that's just one example.
Let's assume that all of that is allowed because, you know, the British, the rulers, the policymakers, that's what we mean, right? That's what we mean when we talk about the West. We talk about America or stuff like that. We do not mean the people. We do not mean the individuals, right?
Of course not,
So these people, they are smart, right? They are clever. Cunning is the right word.
Cunning, right?
They're going to lie to you. There used to be subtle ways to stop you from practicing your faith and stop your faith to become a part of your soul, right?
Okay.
How do we protect ourselves from those... right now, in the textbooks, there's everything there is to manipulate your child into being growing up into a non-Islamic, non-religious,
forget that non-human. They're changing their genders out there, stuff man. Like that, they're becoming LGBT and stuff. So it's crazy, but yeah.
What is my shield?
Marriage, number one thing. If you're going to be living in a non-Islamic environment, thing, and you're going to be young as well. You're a youth. You need to get married. Take all those excuses that you have for not getting married and just chuck them in the bin.
This has to go out for the parents this time, for example. Seriously.
I'm
tired. And I know I'm not another person to be enforcing something, but for God's sake, get your children married. You know, get them married. I'm going to go for a break, gather my thoughts, and then go on again. Right? Let's go for one.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back. So we're talking about the West and the things that we can do to protect our faith in a society like that. Not necessarily the West.
You might be in a Hindu environment.
Anywhere that isn't an Islamic environment.
You might be in Japan or something, I don't know. Which is a heavily West-stoxified culture anyway.
I've never been able to understand the current Japanese situation.
Basically they had honor and decency and integrity, like the samurai.
That's
culture.
Why I said current.
Back then, right? They had all those things, and then Western culture came in and basically reversed it,
demolished,
destroyed
everything
it all.
That they had that could be valued.
But so the first thing, like, about marriage.
What I was talking about the parents is it was a piece of advice and a very humble request to the parents in the West is if you think that your child or the person is not suitable for your child because he is not hasn't reached his maximum potential in his material life, then please know that a person who is not deserving of living. If you think that person does not deserve your child or your child does not deserve that person because he has not reached his maximum potential yet, then I think they don't deserve them because it's inappropriate to think that when a person is at stage zero, a couple is supposed to grow together. You understand? It's not the person has reached everything that he wanted to become, and he's done everything. Now he's ready to get married. That's incorrect.
Yeah, parents say you know you need to first have a job, first have a decent income, have a house, have a car.
Alhamdulillah, I'm married, but I'm going to say this: like, if a woman doesn't want me right now because I'm not fully ready, then she does not deserve me when I'm fully ready.
You go, boy.
You know, know what I'm saying? And that goes for the other case, like other way around also. Yeah. You know, like if I'm thinking, oh, that woman is not ready for me, then I don't deserve the woman when she's ready. You understand? So yeah, please get this one,
guys. Okay. We just hammered this down. Number one is your shield, marriage.
Marriage. Yeah.
Number two, salah.
Salah.
You need to pray your salah. Doesn't matter what situation you are in.
On
you
time.
You need to pray.
Yeah. Try
your
to
prayers.
Pray on
yeah.
time.
You might be in an office environment. You might be embarrassed of praying. Shaitan comes to you and he says, if you pray, then you're going to give bad reputation to your religion. If you are choosing to live in the West, then you are making a conscious decision to live in a non-Islamic environment.
And in those non-Islamic environments, they've got these slogans of, oh, freedom of this, freedom of practice, freedom of that. Use that. Exploit it to your own betterment.
Yeah,
you
and
know?
They don't. That's the saddest thing.
Yeah.
You have the freedom to do something and you still don't do it? No, you have no excuse. You need to be a little bit proud as well. And another thing that happens in the West is, you know, there are different, and this happens in lots of places, where you go into a certain community. First, there's non-Muslims everywhere, right? 90% of people around you are non-Muslim, right? They are atheists, polytheists, whatever.
Yeah.
You finally find a community of Muslims, right? And you're happy, but 90% of them are Sunni. Right?
Yeah.
And so then you start feeling like, oh, what should I do here? What's wrong with you? Pick up your turba, put that bad boy down, and pray. Like, have some blooming courage.
You know where, that,
crying
where,
aloud.
Where yeah. that comes out from? Why that happens?
Why?
Because they're afraid of questions. We are afraid of questions.
Mm-hmm.
Why are we afraid of questions? Because we do not have the answers. I feel that what I'm doing is right, but I cannot, in a verbal debate, prove what I'm my faith, right?
Yeah.
So, which brings us to the third point.
Which is what?
Learning your faith.
Ahsant, yeah.
Right?
Third thing, you need to know your religion better.
Fair enough.
Than,
if you can't be a full-fledged scholar, that's good. Okay, you can't. At least learn the basics that you practice on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Learn the reason behind those things, right? Another thing, yeah. So, understand your faith.
Everything that you're doing in life should be justified Islamically.
Yeah.
You should have the proper arguments for it. If a Christian comes to you, you know how to debate with them. If a Jew comes to you, if a Hindu comes to you, whatever, you know how to discuss with people in the best of manners, of course. Right?
There's another thing that people do face is, for example, people come to you and they're like, oh, why do you pray 3 times a day, 5 times a day, or why is your morning prayer only 2 units and stuff like that? Mm. Okay, these are different things. For example, I do not have to know why it's 2 units in the morning. Right? Because
that's Ta'budi.
Ta'budi means something you have to submit. And right. But it's not the same as Trinity over here, you know, being like, just believe. That's why it is.
Very good point. Yeah. When it comes to your aqa'id, you need to, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
You need to know.
Yeah, you need to know. Why we blindly in this accept the 2-unit prayer in the morning is we have understood the fact and the truth behind that order of that. We have understood that is from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We have proven for ourselves that Allah exists. That's a large debate what exists means. There's nothing but Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. After that, we have understood that the Prophet, peace be upon him, and it's 100% sure for us that he is his Prophet, and then the Quran and stuff like that, right? From there, we have understood that 100% we've been told to pray 2 units a day. That's why we do it. We don't have to explain. Right.
Excellent. Marriage, prayers,
learning
religion.
Your faith.
What's number four?
Right. So I think I'm losing my breath. Let's go for a break and we'll go gather ourselves together after the break.
Thank you.
Welcome back. Yeah, so we're going to carry on talking about what happens in the West and how we can... What can we use as a shield to guard our faith in the West? We talked about a certain things that you must remember. Go on with the fourth, bro.
The fourth one that you need to have in the West is respect your parents.
Oh, that is so heavy. That really is important. That has some insight behind it. That has some insight behind it, yeah.
The world around you, your school, your friends, their parents will be divorced. They'll be swearing at their dads, swearing at their moms, and that's completely normal.
The system is going to give you this illusion of, you have the right against your parents. No, you don't.
Yes, and the system actually enforces it by law that, you know, if you're... dad hits you or something, you can report him for abuse, and ridiculous things like this. It is absolutely ridiculous. It is absolutely un-Islamic. And I'm not saying that sometimes, obviously, it becomes out of hand. Like,
yeah,
to the point
it's
of
not completely justified for a parent to be smacking their kid right, left and center. But
at the same time, we have to understand that that is a taghut. That is not an Islamic government. And
the Quran says that if you... get your what's rightfully yours. You get that from them, that's not right.
Yeah. And you know the definition of totalitarianism is this, that it invades into the personal sphere of your household. And this is precisely what the society is doing. Through even things like the media, right? Simpsons, Family Guy, and Malcolm in the Middle, and all of these sitcoms, all of these comedies, and they all show the dad to be an idiot, an imbecile. The general thing is not to respect your parents. Make fun out of your parents, right? Parents are silly. Islam is telling you that you need to respect them. Not obey them, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't obey your parents all the time.
Obey your parents. He doesn't...
Don't obey your parents when they tell you to do something haram, right? Tell you to do something against the religion.
Yeah, for example, don't wear hijab.
Yeah.
Come on, man,
shut up. You have to disobey your parents.
Yeah,
go ahead. Example. But the general idea is that, look, you need to respect, love, show kindness to your parents.
Yeah.
Something that you lose very easily in the West. The West is a scary
place.
Doesn't
let it shape in the first place for you to lose it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? When you're growing up, you've got no sense of respect for your parents. Yeah.
Okay, so we're out of time, I think. So
yeah, we could go on and on and on and on.
So, number one, we had what? Marriage. Second, prayers. Third,
learning your faith.
Learning your faith. Fourth,
respecting your parents. I think that's probably the most time we have for today's program. That's all the time we have for today, and hopefully it does help you out in your daily lives, and it does help us out. As a reminder, me and Muzaffar Haider are off for today. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
From its beginning, the promise of popular rule in the U.S. has been undermined by the power of racism, capitalism, and patriarchy, says Peter Bloom, journalist, in an article titled, "The Survival of U.S. Democracy is Under Threat." Stay tuned for more. With all that is happening in the United States and the world, it was perhaps all too easy to miss the ongoing battle for the future of U.S. democracy. Republicans have opened up new racist offenses against voter rights and are once more pushing through corrupt gerrymandering to rig elections in their favor. They're also blocking the Freedom to Vote Act that would curb systematic racist voter suppression through policies such as automatic registration at MVA, longer early voting, greater access to mail-in ballots, and fresh regulations for guaranteeing that people are not wrongly barred from voting and reducing partisan interference at the polls. It is no exaggeration to say that the very survivor of liberal democracy in the United States of America is under threat. This Republican strategy is just the latest example of a long history of repressing democracy in the United States of America. From its beginning, the promise of popular rule in the U.S. has been undermined by the power of racism, capitalism, and patriarchy. Further, so much of the nation's imperialism abroad and repression at home have been sanctioned by elected majorities. The effort to stop these Republican assault on democracy is an attempt to preserve the bare minimum of fairness in a system designed by and for elites. Fighting them is crucial for stemming the present spread of white power and corporate rule. Yet, it is also necessary for radically expanding democracy in the future beyond its liberal limits. The overriding aim of Republicans is to maintain power through rigging democracy. This desire is perhaps most blatant in its ongoing gerrymandering strategies. Again and again, they redraw district lines to ensure maximum Republican representation. Regardless of the actual makeup of voters this year, the new census results have provided a once-in-a-decade opportunity for many legislatures to redraw their electoral boundaries in ways that would maximize their partisan advantage. As one expert recently lamented, Republicans have control of the process in many states this year, and so far, they are maximizing their advantage whenever they can. The new lines will likely help Republicans retake control of the U.S. House next year. To be fair, Democrats are also guilty of such legislative chicanery, yet their push for the Freedom to Vote Act shows their desire to at least resign in these duplicitous practices. According to a report by the Brennan Center, if passed by Congress, the legislation would put in place the most transformative changes to the redistricting process in the country's history, including banning partisan gerrymandering, strengthening other protections for communities of color, making it easier for voters to get bad maps quickly struck down in court. The importance of passing this act, though, goes far beyond partisan policies. Gerrymandering and voter suppression laws are the last gasp to democratically protect a racist corporate status quo. The biggest fear of elites is to encourage all non-whites and working-class voters the chance to either cast a ballot against this racist political establishment or elect representatives who would actually challenge it once in power. Republicans and corporate interests backing them are ironically and tragically trying to use democracy against itself. They're seeking to justify their racist hypercapitalism through pretending it is supported by a majority of voters. It is a false perception that their regressive views are actually representative of the desires of U.S. citizens overall. The ultimate goal is to not just maintain but expand this racist capitalist oligarchy. The suppression and rigging of democracy at the ballot box is linked to the broader repression on democracy within the economic and social spheres of the United States. Right-wing political control is needed to push through an anti-worker and anti-civil rights agenda to combat calls for bottom-up change against a free market system that has rapidly increased inequality, incarceration, and imperialism. Just this year, Amazon used fundamentally broken anti-worker labor laws to defeat a vote by warehouse employees in Alabama to unionize. As these crises of racial capitalism only become more acute, so too will the need to use whatever reactionary Democrat means necessary to fight its resistance. Gerrymandering, far-right populist recalls of progressive politicians, and denying historically marginalized populations for their basic voting rights have and will be deployed by elites to decrease the democratic power of unions. Growing demands to defund the police and calls to end the overthrowing and undermining of democracy around the world by the U.S. military. There is a less publicized but a still serious danger to democracy posed by the current battle for the passage of the Freedom to Vote Act. It is to restrict the struggle for democracy to the narrow limits of liberalism. If Republicans want to actively restrict democracy to expand the power of white privilege and corporate oligarchy, status quo Democrats too often want to stop at simply preserving basic voting rights. Instead, this should be the first step in the progressive spread of democracy beyond traditional policies. It means promoting the democratic control of workplaces and community democracy initiatives such as participatory budgeting. It also entails providing global solidarity and real support for radical democratic movements challenging corporate power internationally. The battle for this act represents so much more than the defense of current democracy. It is the ongoing drive to radically expand the power of people over profits locally, nationally, and internationally. The very future of progressive democracy is under threat in the United States of America.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The role of the academic elite in making scientific discoveries. This is a part of the speech delivered on November 17, 2021, by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with a number of the academic elite and top scientific talents of the country. The next step is to pursue a new Islamic civilization. Certainly, one of the most important foundations of any civilization is science. Beneficial science, that is. And when we keep speaking about a new Islamic civilization, we should know that one of the foundations of any civilization is scientific progress. We must prepare ourselves for this. If your eyes are set on this horizon, you, as one of the academic elite, your scientific movement will naturally move in the right direction. And the problems that are sometimes brought up, such as the issue of scientific articles, as mentioned by the friends in the meeting, will be solved. That is, the right direction will be clear and the right progress will be made.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
As for the point that I said I would expand on, it concerns scientific discoveries. This is important. Many scientific activities are taking place in the country today, but these activities are often the byproducts of the scientific creation of others. For instance, someone discovered nuclear energy, and we are working on it today. What is needed and should be pursued is the creation of science. You have to be creative. You have to produce science. And this often happens as a result of discovering a certain force in nature. That is, innovation in science results from discovering a valuable law that exists in nature and that has not been discovered to this day. On the basis of this law, science is produced and many technologies are created. We must pursue this. Our outstanding youth must pursue this creativity in science. For example, there was gravity. These are common old examples that I have been using for a long time. Someone discovered this, and science was created based on it. There was the power of electricity in nature, but no one knew about it until someone discovered it. Based on this discovery, this vast field of science and technology was created. The same is true of new sciences such as nanotechnology, stem cells, and nuclear energy. The discovery of a truth in nature, of a tradition, a valuable law or an element in the nature and science created by God can help you to realize a scientific point.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alami, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Following a meeting with the signatories of the nuclear agreement,
known as the JCPOA, Iran calls for a reasonable, documented and rational response to its proposals for the removal of U.S. sanctions and Iran's return to full compliance. Deputy Foreign Minister and lead negotiator Ali Bagheri-Kani said Britain, France and Germany were not happy with some of Iran's proposals.
They had no complaint about these proposals being irrelevant, but they say they are not consistent with our viewpoints, and I told them this is natural. We are not supposed to express ideas that are in line with your viewpoints. We take our own interests and policies into consideration. The important point is that they are based on principles that all sides agree on. No European side claims that Iran's proposals lack legal basis.
A diplomatic source close to the Iranian negotiating team said the country's proposed drafts were in complete conformity with the JCPOA, adding it was regrettable that some European sides were attempting to dictate their own demands round the negotiating table while failing to acknowledge that a revival of the deal requires compliance by all sides.
I think the current administration, what it is saying is that the JCPOA, the nuclear deal, good or bad, is something that Iran's accepted, and we will commit ourselves to it. However, we will not allow the other side to retain sanctions, maximum pressure sanctions, and then expect us to go back to 2015. That simply won't happen.
EU coordinator Enrico Mora said there were substantial challenges ahead, while time to reach an agreement was not unlimited. While Iran is calling for a rational and documented response to its proposals, European diplomats are expressing concern and skepticism. The Vienna talks are set to resume next week when it may become more clear whether the gaps can be bridged. Homa Lezgi, Vienna.
The story of how Palestine was wrenched from the indigenous people lives on. It is passed down from chest to chest, from generation to generation. Even Palestinians born outside their homeland and raised in refugee camps or elsewhere carry the story with them. Attendees at this art exhibition say living in the UK, it's even more important to show up.
I think here in Britain, given Britain's role in creating the situation for Palestinian people and its ongoing support for the Israeli government and allowing it to carry out its apartheid policies, we have a special duty here to raise awareness about the situation, to fight our government when it supplies weapons to the Israeli government and gives it its support.
I support the struggle completely. And I love the forthright strength, the samud of the Palestinian people is inspiration to anybody. Anybody with any trouble, go to Palestine and see what trouble really is.
The elderly carry the keys to their demolished houses round their necks, and the new generation educate their children on the 1948 land grab that forced out hundreds of thousands of Palestinians. This art exhibition in London is part of their ongoing struggle to raise the flag for Palestine.
I'm here today to celebrate our Palestinian culture, our amazing Palestinian artists. You know, our people are talented, clearly, and it's so nice to see them use their talents to preserve our culture.
This exhibition is called Visualizing Return. It launched on the anniversary of UN Resolution 194, which calls for the immediate return of all Palestinian refugees. Visualizing Return hopes to emphasize the necessity of granting Palestinian refugees this long overdue human right.
Interestingly enough, one of the easiest citizenships to acquire is Israeli citizenship. All you have to do is to prove that you have a Jewish grandparent or a Jewish spouse. But there is a Palestinian diaspora 6 million strong, and they are not allowed to return to their homeland.
The Israeli regime wants to maintain a Jewish majority. If the diaspora were allowed to return, they would by far outnumber the Jewish population. So 73 years into occupation, the demographic war rages on. Exiled Palestinians are raising awareness, but on the front line of this struggle are the men, women and children holed up in the largest open-air prison in the world, the Gaza Strip. Bianca Rahimi, London.
Okay. In its latest annual report, Italy's Center for Social Studies and Policies, CENSIS, has found that some 2 million Italian families were in absolute poverty in 2020, a rise of more than 100% on 2010. This is due to the outbreak of COVID-19 that has accentuated a sense of vulnerability in the country. CENSIS report shows that over 40% of Italians feel insecure, while students suffer increasing levels of depression, anxiety and existential angst.
The COVID-19 pandemic has made more workers vulnerable to pay discrimination, loss of income and exploitative practices. The socioeconomic malaise, which was already worrying before the pandemic, is today very much widespread to all layers of the population.
The company we work for refuses to meet us to discuss the terms of our contract as the pandemic is completely changing the way we work. This is unacceptable.
Over the past months, hundreds of large and smaller protests have been staged across Italy with workers from both the public and private sectors expressing deep concern over their deteriorating rights situation. On Friday in Rome, employees from Sogei, the information and communication technology company of the Ministry of the Economy and Finance, held a demonstration demanding to negotiate new smart working guidelines with the employer. Also on Friday, farmers from an area north of Naples staged a protest near the Agriculture Ministry calling the government for financial assistance. Hundreds of small farming companies have gone bankrupt as the large-scale retail trade has preempted small entrepreneurs.
We haven't been allowed to be here in big numbers due to the COVID restrictions. The government must help us. We are asked to observe the most stringent food regulations when it comes to our products, but fruit and vegetables full of pesticides coming from Morocco and other countries are let in without controls. Furthermore, we haven't received a penny from the EU aid funds to farmers. When the money lands into the regional government's account, it simply disappears.
On Friday, Rome and Milan were both affected by a public transport four-hour strike called by the General Union of Labour, UGL. The nationwide action was called by unionists against the obligation for workers to have the Green Pass, a certificate proving the holder has been vaccinated, tested negative or recovered from COVID-19. Max Civili, Rome.
Abdullah Al-Ghamdi is a Saudi rights campaigner living thousands of miles away from home. But even here, he isn't safe from tactics used by the Saudi regime to silence dissenters.
They attacked my mom and my little brother in Jeddah. In the same time, they attacked my father and another brother in Dammam. My brother in Dammam, they take him for 3 years. Nobody know where is he. But after three weeks. After 3 weeks, they release him, but they ask him to talk about me.
Abdullah and fellow rights campaigners are trustees of London-based human rights organization Sana'a. Here at a press conference ahead of releasing their first report on Saudi rights abuses titled I Fear for My Mother, compatriot Fahd Al-Ghawaidi has experienced the heavy hand of the Saudi regime more than once.
Believe it or not, I was selling books on the street. And the Saudi regime back then was, until now, he was, the knowledge is forbidden for the people in Saudi Arabia.
Another dissident had an entirely different experience. Journalist Jamal Khashoggi, killed at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, Turkey in 2018 to send a chilling message. Yet these campaigners say the murder has redoubled their resolve.
Jamal Khashoggi is dead now, but the idea of Jamal Khashoggi is still alive and it will be alive and remembered in our minds and in our heart forever.
The activists here say that the hopes of real reform in Saudi Arabia under the current regime are slim. That what is needed is real radical change, a revolution, and that's exactly what the current regime in Saudi Arabia cannot stomach.
They also believe the royals of Riyadh would not be able to maintain their human rights abuses without the support of Western governments, including the UK, a major supplier of weapons to Saudi Arabia.
Politicians pursue monetary and other personal interests, and in doing so, they overlook human rights abuses, even when it comes to matters which goes against their own principles, such as freedom of speech and of expression.
To Abdullah and his fellow campaigners, the road to real reform in Saudi Arabia is a tedious one, but they say they won't relent. They say they're motivated by the words of Nelson Mandela. It always seems impossible until it's done. Saeed Purizza, London.
The President of the Shura Council and the Deputy Speaker of the House of Representatives in the Saudi-backed Hadi regime admitted that the regime has turned its back to